You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You might remember when Karen Armstrong visited our show in October 2009 to talk about her book called Case for God. It was a response to the books by people like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins, the new atheists who argue that religious faith is dangerous and opposed to logical thought. Ms. Armstrong argued that true religious practice is based on compassion and a strong moral compass rather than in blind faith. Then in February, I spoke to philosopher and self-described atheist Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein about her latest novel, which deals with people who have strong morals and lead virtuous and meaningful lives despite not believing in God. So its title, 36 Arguments for the Existence of God, may come as something of a surprise. The book's subtitle, though, is A Work of Fiction. We thought that we would re-air a conversation for you today on this long holiday weekend. I began by reminding Rebecca Neuberger Goldstein that she'd been on our show in 2006 to discuss a work of nonfiction, her biography of Baruch Spinoza called Betraying Spinoza. Spinoza was excommunicated by the Portuguese Jewish congregation of Amsterdam, and I asked her, where did he stand on the existence of God?
Well, that's a vexed question, because he spoke incessantly about God, but his conception of God was so different from others, and so much in opposition to what he called the superstitious religions.
Was he kind of a deist, an early deist?
No, he wasn't a deist. He truly denies the existence of a transcendent God, and he identifies God with nature, but that in itself is a very ambiguous notion. And actually, one of the things that I try to do in the book is to unravel that notion. And I come to the conclusion that what he meant by this God that he identifies with nature, it's not the nature of bubbling brooks and whispering pines. It's not a kind of pantheist notion. But he basically meant what string theorists now call the final theory of everything.
Now, you wrote this book, it seems to me, not only in a response to believers, but also the new atheists.
Yes. So actually, as a consequence of publishing on Spinoza, who is a hero to freethinkers everywhere, I got caught up somewhat in organized non-religion. One of the things I discovered was that non-religion was almost as organized as religion, many foundations and groups, and I got invited to speak at them. And I found myself often upset when I was speaking with people with whom I basically agreed in terms of our metaphysics, what we think exists, when they would describe people with whom I don't agree, religious people. I felt that there was a kind of simplification and dismissal.
You said that in the discussions between God believers and the so-called new atheists, it often seems that people on one side can't begin to grasp what the world is like, what it feels like for those on the other side. When the person with whom one is conversing appears utterly opaque, then mistrust and contempt are easily aroused. How can he be saying that when the opposite seems so obvious to me? Is he stupid, dishonest, maybe just a touch evil? Is that what got you thinking about writing this book?
Yes, exactly. You know, I'm trained as a philosopher, but every once in a while I feel that there's some question, some existential dilemma that I can only treat in a novel and not in... Did I say I was trained as... What did I say?
A philosopher.
I did say that. Okay. Trained as a philosopher, yes. And...
Well, you're not the first person trained as a philosopher who's written novels.
Absolutely.
Sartre did wrote quite a few.
It's true, but I'm trained in a very different kind of philosophy. I'm trained in analytic philosophy, philosophy of science, mathematical logic, and we tend to turn up our noses at literature. I've had to actually overcome that training in myself. But I did feel that this was one of those areas in which people who hold different points of view are oriented toward the world so differently that these differences go so deep down into points of view. And that's what fiction is so made to explore, different points of view.
But when you wrote, when you gave this book a subtitle, A Work of Fiction, it's 36 Arguments for the Existence of God, A Work of Fiction. I suspect that you're not just telling us that you've written a novel here.
this is right. Yes, that's the first joke. It is a very funny book, by the way.
Yeah.
Serious themes, but you know, funny because I learned as a teacher, if you're going to get people to listen to you, you have to keep them listening, and being funny is one of the ways to do this. Anyway, it just comes, the absurd comes naturally to me.
Especially when you're dealing with this kind of material.
Exactly. And so 36 Arguments for the Existence of God, a work of fiction, is meant to be the first joke. That is that those 36 arguments are themselves a work of fiction.
Your protagonist, the professor Cass Seltzer, is an atheist who's made the study of religion the focus of his life's work. An atheist fascinated by religion, would that describe you as well?
Yes, I guess it would.
Because there are atheists out there who just say, well, you know, I don't believe in the existence of God, and then they move on and don't think about it.
Yes. Again. I mean, I was brought up in a very Orthodox Jewish household, and philosophy was my way of distancing from that, gaining some objectivity about it, and ultimately rejecting it. But those issues are very alive for me, and I feel I feel a certain sympathy towards the religious impulse.
Cass and many of the principal characters, including his mentor and girlfriend, and even the names of buildings in the university campus are Jewish. How does being Jewish affect the thinking of the academics in this novel?
Well, one of the themes in the novel is that religion is about so much more than belief in God, and that even demonstrating the fallacies and arguments for the existence of God may not really affect one's religiosity. And that is something I feel that I learned very strongly in a Jewish community, that there might be something about Judaism in particular that demonstrates that religion is about so much more than just belief in God.
Well, why do you think there are and have been so many secular Jewish intellectuals over the course of modern European history? Is it simply a rebellion against the teachings of the religion, or is it because Judaism is a questioning faith? And once you start questioning, you wind up questioning everything. In fact, I've spoken to any number of people who are Catholic nuns and priests who say that questioning the existence of God is just normal for them.
For the Catholic,
yeah,
it's interesting. Well, in traditional Judaism, arguments for God are really bypassed. I mean, it's an intensely intellectual religion, but it's, as you know, about the law, applications of the law. It's Talmud is really almost completely without any metaphysical discussion. It's a very practical kind of law-centered discussion. And so, you know, I don't think Maimonides is one exception, but he was influenced by secular society, by the science of his time, which was Aristotelian. But he was very controversial in his day. There were people who I think did excommunicate him or threatened to excommunicate him for bringing philosophy into the discussion. So it's quite an unphilosophical religion traditionally, but it is a questioning religion, and so that might have something to do with it. I also think there might be something about being marginal figures, of sort of standing in two cultures that gives one a sort of objectivity.
My guest is Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein. Her latest book is a novel called 36 Arguments for the Existence of God, a Work of Fiction. It's published by Pantheon. Cass Seltzer, your protagonist, chose to specialize in the psychology of religion because, according to him, nobody else wanted it.
Yes. So, and this is actually, there's some truth in this, that really the investigation of psychology of religion was so marginalized for years and years in the academy.
Because it suggested, perhaps, that you could even question a psychological basis for a belief?
I think part of it had to do with there was really no way to grapple with this before. But evolutionary psychology, which has really become very vigorous in the last few decades, has given psychologists a means to try to explain all sorts of human impulses, romance and aesthetics and religiosity. So there's a handle now.
In your novel, when interest in religion surges after 9/11, Cass Seltzer's work becomes a success in the mainstream. Is that what actually happened? Was there a growth in the study of religion?
Yes,
after
I think
9/11?
So. You know, and certainly, you know, listeners to your program or, you know, any NPR program know religion is a phenomenon that's on everybody's mind now. I mean, there is, because of a confluence of various circumstances, starting with 9/11, but also I think the last administration and the eroding of the wall between, you know, separation of church and state, and all sorts of phenomena that have occurred. Religion is really on everyone's mind.
Well, Cass is interested in how the religious response manifests itself, even in ways that may not seem religious.
Yes, this is a big theme of the book, and it is a kind of a. Again, I mean, it's a little bit of an argument I have with the new atheists, that they tend to locate this religious impulse among the religious. And my Cass Seltzer believes that it is, it's rooted in human nature so deeply that it spills out into all sorts of spheres of life.
Well, this is the sort of thing that was discussed in Dostoevsky, for example, where
yes.
he tried to explain why somebody who was an atheist could have a very strong moral sense, whereas somebody else who was religious might commit a crime.
Yeah. Actually, I'm one of the...
That's the Brothers Karamazov.
That's the Brothers Karamazov, absolutely. But, I mean, Cass has this sort of mischievous view, as do I, that even among very secular people, and that you could find it in the academy, in academia, and I have a great deal of fun with this.
This is satire in academia as much as,
yes.
Even more than it is about religion.
Well, actually, every aspect is trying to demonstrate something about religion. And so Cass Seltzer has a mentor and tormentor, the extreme distinguished professor, not just distinguished, extreme distinguished professor of faith, literature, and values named Jonas Elijah Clapper. And Clapper's own self-mythologizing grandiosity, which you sometimes find among academics, as well as his graduate students' deification of him, all demonstrate something about how religion isn't confined just to religious spheres.
Cass also has women problems. He has a girlfriend named Lucinda Mandelbaum, known in academia as the goddess of game theory. They don't seem well suited.
No, you don't think so. Well, I think that readers catch on to that much sooner than poor Cass Seltzer does. I give him a rather troubled romantic life. Again, you know, there's a method behind this madness. It's to demonstrate that romantic reactions also have something of the religious hanging around them.
His ex-girlfriend, Roz, founds a nonprofit called the Immortality Foundation.
Yes.
Now, this almost seems like a move into magic realism, but I suspect there are actually organizations like
there
this.
There is. As a matter of fact, you can go look it up. There's one that I read quite often, or did when I was doing research for the book, called the Methuselah Foundation.
So how much of this is a Romana Clay? We have, although you have fictionalized places here, they're easily recognized.
Mm-hmm.
The university, Frankfurter University, is really Brandeis, I'm sure. There's a Hasidic town that I could probably name.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm suspecting that a lot of the people here who you are often making fun of are based on real people that you've known in academia.
Actually, nobody is exactly anybody. That there are...
So you're not going to be sued?
I certainly hope not. but there are pieces of, you know, real people. And I would say, actually, the one person who has a piece of themselves in every character is probably me.
Are people disappointed when they discover that you're an atheist after you've written a book called 36 Arguments for the Existence of God?
Yeah, when that subtitle is left off. And when I was on my book tour, there were people who came expecting to hear, you know, the argument against Dawkins and Dennett. And, you know, some members of the audience sometimes got a little exercised. One woman said to me in Philadelphia, "Are you actually saying that you're an atheist? I've never heard anybody say something so terrible about themselves." Which was interesting. Fortunately, one of the things you're trained to do as a philosopher is to think fast on your feet. And we actually ended up having what to me was one of the best dialogues of my whole book tour.
Mm. Well, I'm sure that there are many people who are upset that you're an atheist or that anyone could be an atheist. But that's part of what this book is all about.
Yes.
And I want to thank you so much for being with us again, Rebecca Neuberger-Goldstein. Her book, 36 Arguments for the Existence of God, a Work of Fiction, is published by Pantheon.
Thank you.